The information provided in this podcast is general in nature. All medical and surgical procedures have potential benefits and risks. Please consult an ophthalmologist for medical advice specific to your individual patients.
Hi, my name is Christina Icavangelo, and on behalf of the Clinical Relationships team at Vision Eye Institute, I'd like to welcome you to our podcast series, Shared Vision, Shared Care. In each episode, I will be joined by two of Vision Eye Institute's ophthalmologists, and we will discuss a collaborative care approach on various subspecialties. As a clinical optometrist myself, it is our aim that this series will strengthen the relationship between referrers and ophthalmologists, one where you will feel confident knowing when to refer, what to refer, and how to co-manage. I will be asking the questions on behalf of you, the referrers. Today, in this episode, I am joined by Dr. Rashmir Karim and Dr. Crystalline Raj to discuss the complexity around cataract surgery. In brief, both doctors are highly respected cataract and pediatric ophthalmologists, with Dr. Rashmir Karim located at our Drummoyne, Chatswood and Tuggerah Lakes clinics in New South Wales, and Dr. Crystalline Raj at our Camberwell and Coburg clinics in Melbourne. Thank you for joining me, ladies.
Chris, I haven't seen you because you've been in Melbourne. How's Melbourne treating you?
Well, it's nice to be out of lockdown, Rashmir. I have to say we're doing a bit better than you guys at the moment, but I'm sure the onslaught of the bad weather is going to hit us. So we're doing okay. We're playing catch up a lot, like many surgeons everywhere. But yeah, we're enjoying the last little bits of summer, so it's kind of nice.
Absolutely. We had no summer. But, you know, very busy in the clinic, and I've got very interesting case that I really wanted to pick your brain on, because I know you do quite a lot of complex cases, including the Lenzex, as well as a varied mix of multifocals and monofocals and monovision. I had this patient, really interesting case. So obviously I'm a neuro-ophthalmologist as well, and I got a neurology referral. So it's sort of a neuro patient that sort of came to me slightly unhappy that they had a multifocal IOL, and they were getting this kind of misting and glare and really unable to look at, do the things they wanted to do.
What's going on?
What are some of the red flags that you would think about in a patient that's sort of come back unhappy what are you looking for?
Yeah, so great scenario, because I think we all get these type of patients, right? And it's interesting that this was sent to you as a neuro problem.
I know.
And I guess because there's not, you're gold, neuro-ophthalmologists are gold, there's not that many of you around. But having said that, I think we, and that's all optometrists, as well as ophthalmologists who are not neuro-ophthalmologists, can actually do a really quick neuro exam to check if this is actually a neuro problem. And it's something that I start doing, not an unreasonable thing to consider, given that our population we're dealing with is an elderly population. Sure, they could have neurological problems. But a really, like a couple of tests will give you the answer quickly if there's something that you should be worried about. And the things that I look for, I'm sure you do this all the time, but I look for, check their pupils, look for an RAPD, you know, that'd be just obvious straight away that you'd be worried about something. And then do a motility exam. You really don't need anything more than a pen torch at this point. Double H pattern, you're looking for a six that maybe we've missed before surgery, or maybe they've actually gotten it after surgery, after the anaesthetic. And that could easily make someone really unhappy because they're getting this double vision that they can't really explain and they're just out of focus. Same thing with a third nerve palsy, which you kind of do want to find out about because they might need something more serious and a referral to a hospital, not you.
I think you're spot on there, because that's exactly what I did. And lo and behold, the patient's symptoms were present when she covered one eye and then the other eye, and that's clear.
Right. So monocular diplopia.
Absolutely. So, and then, you know, I think it's really important to stress the value of a history during a consultation when a patient is unhappy, but also before a patient has cataract surgery. So I'll fill you in a bit more about this case. And I know you've got a few of my notes because I did, ask for a second opinion from you. So it was really interesting. This lady, she was like a low myope, but very interestingly, she is an artist, and the type of artwork she does is actually very important in this case because she does extremely delicate faces, and the way she does her artwork as well is not looking down with readers. She looks straight ahead, so straight through her glasses prescription, her previous glasses prescription. Very, very high mag, delicate.
Very intricate work, obviously.
Absolutely. So. And obviously, we know multifocal lenses are fantastic in the right patient. But for her, she was seeing those concentric rings when she was looking straight, trying to do her artwork. And she still required glasses prescription for her art, as well as not being able to do the art as best as she would like to post cataract surgery. So, you know, it does bring up significant issues in terms of patient selection. So can I ask you sort of what you think about when you have a patient in front of you and they're sort of umming and ahhing? So they want, you know, they want to be glasses free, they want a multifocal lens. What's some of your sort of key red flags or take home?
So one of the things that I've come to realise is that multifocal lenses and extended depth of focus lenses, all of those ones that give you sort of distance vision plus something else, are great. We can't live without them. But I dislike how we've called them premium intraocular lenses because people, and I think patients, that feel like, well, that's the best lens, so therefore I should get the best lens. And you and I both know that the best lens is the best lens for that patient and their visual needs. So for this patient in front of us, they're an artist. They obviously don't like anything to be compromised for reading. That's where their world is. And a multifocal will give you some independence, but it will compromise that. So if someone walks in and says to me, you know, I want to be a bit spectacle independent, but I want excellent reading vision, I'll talk to them about the merits of monofocal plus, so an extended depth of focus, or a multifocal. But I'll sort of say, if you want excellent reading vision, I'm still going to need to give you reading glasses. So sure, you can have the multifocal. It'll give you independence 70% of the time. But for the work that you're doing, you'll still need a simple pair of magnifiers as a pair of readers. And some people are okay with that. And some people hear it and I guess don't see why they need to have a multifocal in that case, and that might be fine for them. They could have a monofocal correction and have some reading glasses. But what I like how you sorted this out in terms of asking the patient really what's the issue, and is it that they have all these positive phenomena like the glare and the side effects, which it sounded like she was having. And from what I understood, she only had it in one eye, right? So she had a multifocal in one eye. So we still haven't operated on her other eye. So I guess that's where you can work your magic.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like, I'm very similar. So when I see a patient, I very much give all options. So, you know, monofocal lens, multifocal lens, and very rarely monovision in patients who've already on monovision. But yeah, wording is key, and explaining to the patient and really ensuring that they understand what they're choosing, you know, informed consent is key. And so I sort of put it to them in very layman's terms. So I sort of say, look, you can have crystal clear distance vision with a monofocal lens, but you are absolutely going to need a +2 to +3 reader. Yep. And this is the lens that you're probably going to have. And I pop out my +3 and I put it in front of them and I'm like, this is the reader that you're going to have, like, eyewear at the moment.
And some people are fine with that because let's face it, they've been wearing glasses or readers for the last 10 years or so.
Absolutely. There is nothing not premium about having crystal clear distance
absolutely
glasses free for driving. And then what I say is a multifocal lens is fantastic if you're kind of happy-go-lucky, low hyperope, and it kind of gives you like 80 to 90% distance, and it's kind of going to give you about 60 or 70% middle, and it's going to give you about a 50% close up. And if you're happy with those kind of figures, then that's great. But if you want like 100% reading as well as 100% distance, something's got to give, and one of those parameters are going to require glasses.
And I think it's a compromise. I think that's the other word I use. I say it's a compromise. It's not exactly perfect. And most people will get that, will understand what that's about. Do they ever ask you what you would like? Because it is, I've had that a lot.
Do you know what? Actually, that's really interesting. I use my parents as an example because personality trait is really important. So my artist patient was type A, high achieving, low myo, really high visual needs. So, you know, certain groups of patients, you know, I would stay clear of a multifocal. So like my mum, you know, GP, high achieving, type A personality, she's having a monofocal lens put in next month. Dad's already had a multifocal lens, really happy-go-lucky, you know, does a bit of pottering around in the garden here or there, sort of not too bad.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So I use my parents. I go, one has one option and the other one's having another option. And you know, so no, even my parents don't have one, you know, there's no one perfect lens that we're hiding from patients or, you know.
Yeah, like that's right. And it's not one size fits all. I think that's it. And the trouble is, I think, Rashmi, this takes a little while, and often it takes your orthoptist to maybe start it off and then us finishing it off. And I give them some information on the multifocal lens as well as the standard lens, and I say, we're not going to order anything yet. Have a think about it. But this is the one that I'd choose. Now, you would usually sort of sway them in one direction based on my professional opinion, so they don't have to go that way as long as they understand what's going on.
And I think we've got another case, but I think also in this case, you know, talking to their optometrist, like I did for another case.
You do have an interesting case.
Also really important because, you know, their optometrist, their GP may actually know the patient as well quite well.
Much better.
Their partner, kids, you know, and you really want to know what they do day to day. It's all well and good if they, you know, basically say to you, oh, you know, I don't really drive. But actually, again, I'm going on a tangent, but I had a patient who said, I'm not driving. I never drive. My husband drives all the time. And then, you know, a few weeks later, husband's in hospital. She's now the driver. She's like, oh, no, I absolutely have to drive now. So, you know, I also kind of counsel that, you know, you may not want to do something now.
But your needs may change.
Your pending needs in the future might be vastly different to what it is now. So I think it's a good case. It highlights that, you know, while we've got some excellent multifocals and extended depth of focus kind of IOLs, you know, sometimes they're not suitable for
everybody. Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely.
Extend on that a little bit. If we do have a patient as an optometrist present who is interested in multifocal IOLs, because we do, you know, engage in that conversation and sometimes even pop in a little suggestion in referral letters when we send them through your way, is it possibly a good idea to try multifocal contact lenses? So I suppose, I mean, it would depend on the severity of the cataract.
But
if they're, you know, if they're not too dense, and they're of, you know, obviously able to put the contact lens in and all that sort of stuff, would it give them a good indication as to what the possible, you know, that compromise on distance versus near and that playoff between the two if we go trialing with multifocal contacts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great idea. The reason that we often don't get to do it though, Christina, is we sort of see them where their cataract's a little bit more advanced. That you're right, the visual potential with the contact lens is not that much better. So they don't actually get to appreciate it. It's just all blurry, or we've made it worse for them. And so, yeah, great idea. It's a great idea to introduce this to your presbyopes and, you know, your presbyopes that you've known, because they're the ones who can trial something like this and start thinking about it, even though it may just be, you know, 10, 15 years down the track, and hopefully we'll have new IOLs. But I think now to realise, because they've sort of already understood compromise when they're a presbyo, because all of a sudden their reading's been taken away. And so they sort of know what they'd be happy to put up with. It. They've known how good they are with reading glasses or losing their reading glasses. So they sort of know what they'd want. And like I know now what I would want when I have cataract surgery. I'm a low myo and I just love being able to read. So if someone took that away from me, I would just give up. So I think presbyopes and that age group, they're when we start talking about this. And, yeah, if you can get them into multifocals, they're going to love you.
Because they do. They present and they're, you know, been 5 years with glasses. They might be 50, 55. You can see some subtle early changes there and they want to know what their options are because they're sick of wearing glasses. And, you know, if we can, often the question is, can I get laser surgery? But if we know that that's not an option, then at least we can say, look, try these lenses and this could possibly be what you can achieve by, you know, implanting it artificially into the eye. So I've had a couple of patients who've wanted to try and what's my vision going to be like after surgery. So I just thought maybe, multifocal contact lenses could.
I think that's absolutely rings true. There's a few no-nos from me that I've learned from experience. High myopes, I don't put multifocal lenses in. From a sort of strabismus motility and neuro point of view, patients with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, any coordination or motility problem that they can't, use fusional reserves or accommodate their convergence, I would really counsel against multifocal. And then I'm sure, Chris, you've probably got a lot of medical retina patients, glaucoma patients with amblyopia. They're the ones that, you know, you really want to give them excellent counselling as to what lens
And the whole reason behind that is even the manufacturers who bought out these multifocal lenses and the extended depth of focus lenses sort of say, you know, you need a clear visual axis all the way through. So that means a nice clear cornea, no pathology there. Obviously, the cataract, when we take the cataract out, and then a nice happy retina with nothing going on, no glaucoma. And the reason is, and I've actually seen this, that say down the track someone develops an epiretinal membrane because they've had diabetes for some time and, you know, it's been okay, but then they develop an epiretinal membrane, their vision can drop 4 lines with a multifocal lens and only 2 lines if they've had a monofocal lens. So whether you operated on the epiretinal membrane is secondary. You may not always need to do that. But the fact that you've kind of made their vision worse because they're looking through a multifocal lens that has different focusing capability that they just can't do anymore because of that pathology. So that's really the reason that you want a crisp, clear retina with no disease, just like in the cornea. I'm with you totally. I spend a lot of time convincing patients why they should have a monofocal lens. Because, you know, they're used to their friend at the bowls club who's had a multifocal lens and goes on about it. And you just have to sort of say, well, you can have that too. You just have to wear glasses up close, but, you know, it's not going to be forever.
I agree. Patient selection and then understanding their comorbidities is really key. And doing that assessment before you put them down a cataract surgery pathway is really important. So it's really important to, like, you know, tailor it, have a really bespoke approach to every single patient.
So I liked, Rishmi, how you mentioned high myopes. This is actually one of your cases that I've pulled out. But yes, I really like the fact that we don't get any easy cases. They've got a chemical injury to one eye, so their vision's really poor. So they've only got one good eye. They're a high myope in that eye. And they sew sailboats for a living.
Sails and sails. Also yes, that the sails of a boat, and also contributes to like the Sydney to Hobart race, and you know, like very proud as punch.
So they sew sails at an elite level.
Elite level.
And you've only got one eye to get this one right. I think the first thing to say, it's really tempting when you see a myope to go, I can get rid of your glasses. And knowing this extra, this is why I put this in, this extra information is vital to what you do to this patient because it appears correct me if I'm wrong, that their whole world is up close.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So like I originally saw this patient and you know, I looked at their eye and they were like minus 12 in one eye and minus 8 in the other eye, and they're sort of doing this mix and match contact lens thing, and but always minus sort of contact lens and then plus like glass over it, and it was a 6/24 cataract. You know, it really needed to be done. It wasn't like a let's hold off
until it gets worse.
Yeah, exactly. And he originally came just like everybody else, with, oh, you know, can I be glasses free? You know, I want to, you know, not drive with glasses. And then I sort of, it was long counseling about, you know, these are your options. You're really high myope, so I would really encourage you to consider a monofocal lens, and let's aim for slightly more minus. And then I sort of said, oh, do you want to aim for zero? Do you want, you know, and I always put sort of lenses up, but you're completely correct. When it's a dense cataract, they can't appreciate the lens because they're looking through frosted glass. So I happened to go, he kind of mentioned, he goes, oh, I've got this amazing optometrist in the city. I didn't get to see her because of COVID, but I really want, you know, maybe you should chat to her. And I'm like, let me chat to her. So I spent the afternoon, I was like, look, I've got some time, let me ring her. And she was really surprised. I rang her and I said, oh, yeah, ex-patient. He's asked me to do his cataracts. And the first thing she said was, do not make him hyperopic. Do not, you know, his world is.
Wow.
Do not, like, I've known him, she'd known him for over 20 years, you know, because, you know, when you're high myope, like minus 12, you know, you have a very good relationship with your optometrist.
With your optometrist, absolutely.
that's a symbiotic relationship there. And so she was like, don't, please, you know, and, you know, I'm glad you asked me for my advice. And I'm like, absolutely, you know, and he values your opinion as well, because he's just totally all over the place what to do, but, you know, it needs to be done. And he's got a chemical injury in one eye with stem cells and the other eye is.
I mean, you've only got this eye, so making him hyper, you can't even, you haven't got the other eye to sort of refractively compensate. So I agree. So do you think multifocal, you sort of said you'd never put a multifocal in a high myope. I have to agree with you. The other reason here is that he just doesn't have a second eye. So say he had glare issues and, you know, I can't even compensate by putting a monofocal in the other eye. I agree. I'd aim for something like -2, -250 and make him appreciate not needing any glasses, because that would, with his at least work up close, it seems if he wore a pair of glasses, it would frustrate him more than anything else.
He's used to wearing glasses for driving and distance. He takes like it off. Yeah. So he and because I'm the opposite. I'm a low hyperope now going through presbyopia. So that's exactly what I did. I kind of tweaked it. I kind of aimed for sort of -2 to -1.5, and then he kind of landed kind of on that range and was pleased as punch, like super happy. Wife came in as well, really appreciative.
I did actually
do the other eye.
I'm surprised you could see through the cornea.
Yeah, it was okay. Sydney Eye Hospital did well with the stem cell graft, it was tricky. He had a huge eye, you know, like axial length, AC depth, all of those challenges. And I think, you know, I think he also had a bit of, you know, pseudo exfoliation, and, you know, the bag was a bit unstable. You know, it was all those parameters that
everything with a large eye.
Yeah, makes it fun.
It's a good point with them high myope as well, as you mentioned. So we're changing their refractive correction, but we're not changing the eye. The eye's still large. It's still got a high tendency for retinal tears, particularly after cataract surgery. So this is the other thing in someone like this, not only eye, but the fact that he's a high myope. And I tend to follow these patients every week, sort of just to see, particularly for like the first month after surgery, because they often do have a PVD if he doesn't already after surgery, and then that could make them prone to a retinal tear And the last thing you want in his good eyes to have a detachment from that.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I did add, I think he's had a retinopexy as well.
Of course he has. What is being complete?
I always tell the theatre staff, I'm like, this one's another difficult case. And they're like, Dr. Karim, every single one of your cases is difficult. I said, I know.
This is what makes you a really good surgeon, I think, when you know, it's not just one problem. We're sort of dealing with multiple levels, and we've got a patient at the end of it, and they may not realise how challenging it is, and they don't need to. That's not their problem. We take on that responsibility, but they need to know what outcomes they're looking at, and that's what makes a counselling session really important in every patient, but particularly in patients that have got more than one comorbid disease going on.
And I recently saw that Medicare has approved a telehealth type code that allows an optometrist to be sitting with a patient to claim a telehealth Medicare code where we are in consult with an ophthalmologist. So, for example, you know, an anxious type patient where we're trying to say, look, you know, to improve the quality of your vision, you really probably have to get cataract surgery, rather than sending them to you and then, you know, having a chat with us after the fact, or, you know, umming and ahhing in that sense. Is telehealth and the world of telehealth, particularly because of post-COVID type scenarios, is that something that you see growing in our field, or something that you guys are approachable with?
Yeah, I haven't seen it growing only because you can't really do our job over telehealth, but stuff like that is great and we can definitely do that. And I think, to pardon the pun, but we need to keep the phone lines open for discussions like that, you know, and that I haven't seen that, but that's a great incentive, because if you speak to me whilst you've got your patient there, they're going to have a lot more confidence in coming to see me anyway, because, you know, they said, oh, as per our discussion, I've been thinking of this, this and this, and then there probably will be more conversations I think we'll have to have, but that's a great way to start the ball rolling. So great incentive, Medicare. Wow, I didn't know that. So that's the code for optometry.
Well, yeah, I just saw it yesterday briefly. I think it was in the Snapshot or Practice magazine from OA, and I saw that there was, yeah, that Medicare had approved a telehealth type. And, you know, it is difficult with optometry to do, and obviously ophthalmology to do our tests and diagnoses and what's off by telehealth. It's pretty much, you know, impossible. But with these types of patients where we're trying to approach their, you know, emotional side of things, mental side of things, really assessing their quality of life and not just looking at their eyes, whether that three-way conversation can then actually be, you know, conducted with the patient is an option.
And I think that's what you kind of did, Rishmi. I think I do that already.
I'm very much information gatherer. I think, you know, you get one shot at cataract surgery. I know we do it day in, day out, and it's sort of second nature to us. But when the patient's in front of us, that's their eye and their life and their quality of life really impacts them. It's life changing for them. Yeah. So I think all the more reason to really think about our approach and really understand the patient, their needs, and really give bespoke care to each patient. You know, that's what I always, and I think we all do. I think we all look at the patient and we think about, you know, what would I do for my parents, or what would I do myself, or what can I do to make this patient's life better?
That's a really important point that you said. You only get one chance at it. So your first bet, like many things, your first sort of go at it is the best go that you've had. So you want to make sure you've got all the right information. It's sort of like, you know, measure twice and cut once. Same sort of principle in ophthalmology. Yeah, and I feel like probably because, as you say, we do it so much, everyone thinks, oh, it's quite easy and, you know, there's nothing to it. There isn't. It just means that you have to actually go back and do kind of a lot of work behind the scenes, and you can be caught out if you don't. And these cases, definitely. But in order to prepare for these cases, you have to start doing that for all the cases, really.
Yeah, exactly.
We thank you, listeners, for joining us today. Don't forget to fill in the registration attendance feedback form and add this learning event to your CPD portfolio. Please join us for the next part of this episode.